It's time for another Internet Advisor Show podcast. Since 1998, we've been helping computer users get on the Internet, get around it, and get over the problems they encounter there. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour weekly radio program heard on WJR 760 AM in Detroit since 1998 and across the state of Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor podcast.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Well, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show. This is Gary Baker. We have a great show for you today. 2 hours, fun-filled. We've got some special guests the first hour, and then we're going to open up the lines and answer all of your questions for the second hour. I have Ed Riddell and Shane Hamlin here with me, and we are going to be really interested in the kinds of questions that you're going to ask us. So we're going to take a break and come right back. Well, this is Gary Baker. We're here for 2 hours. I'm here with Ed Riddell and Shane Hamlin. Foster Brown has the day off, or does he? Do we have Foster on the line with us? Welcome to the Internet Advisor, Foster. I get to say that to you.
Hey, Gary, I just can't stay away from the show after all these years you and I have been doing it together. I just wanted to say hello briefly from Seattle Tacoma Airport. I'm on my way heading to Victoria, British Columbia to spend a week with my sister there, who has lived there for some 40 years, and meet nephews that I have never met before. They're in their 30s now, so it's quite an exciting time.
Well, that's great. That's great that you thought enough of us, got the time change right to call us during the show.
Well, Gary, one of the things I wanted to say, it's kind of a cute thing. You know, all of us guys who love gadgets when we travel need a place to plug in, and you probably have experienced that traveling. Air Alaska has this wonderful setup where they have these seats that are called power at the gate, and they actually have outlets like every two or three seats as you're waiting for your plane that you can power up your devices. So my gadgets are all go.
So you've been at the charging station and you're ready to get back onto the airplane, eh?
That's exactly it. No room for big people, by the way. Short people have the advantage on airlines nowadays.
They sure do. Well, thank you for calling in. We appreciate it. And safe travels. We'll miss you again next week, but we'll see
you
on the 4th.
And we will save you a piece of virtual birthday cake.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yes.
The only kind I can afford eating anymore. Take care, guys. Have a good day.
Take care, Foster. That was nice that he called in. And Ed, thank you very much for a birthday cake. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
That.
I'll try to post something on the website.
All right.
So have you seen the article about the Google Glasses? Google has started shipping them, very limited release, but I was surprised at the end-user policy agreement, the terms of service.
Somebody tried to sell. They got the right to get one. They haven't even gotten it yet, but they were trying to sell it on eBay, and Google took exception with that?
Yeah, of course they did. And basically, you may not resell, loan, transfer, or give your device to any other person. If you resell, loan, transfer, or give your device to any other person without Google's explicit authorization, Google reserves the right to deactivate your device, and neither you nor the authorized person using the device will be entitled to any refund, product support, or product warranty.
So now this is like software. Software's been like this for
a while, what it reminded me of,
But this is interesting that this is a hardware device that they're limiting the resale and even lending. They won't even allow you to lend it, right?
Not even lend it.
That's right.
And I imagine it has something to do with all the personalized information. I mean, Google would be tracking almost like Big Brother, everything about the location of this device, the type of information. You know, you could do real-time photo captures with this device. You could stream the video all the time. And then if you happen to have one of those moments where, oh, I wish I would have caught that accident I just saw at that intersection, you could say capture, and it will probably grab the last 30 seconds and archive that photo that you just missed.
That's a good point. And they really are restricting the use of them right now because only certain people, I think what you have to do is you have to respond to if I had Google Glass, I would, kind of, that kind of a question, you respond. And if they like your response, then they'll allow you to buy for $1,500. They will allow you to buy.
The privilege of purchasing. Now, Shane, you have this empire look in your eye.
But you know what? This eBay, before it actually went to fruition, it was up to $90,000 people were bidding to buy this thing that this guy was going to be able to pay $1,500 for. And then he took it down. So there was no sale on eBay. But that it's amazing what people are willing to pay to get one of these. And all you have to do is qualify. So
they scare me a little bit. Let me put my Bing glasses on first, and then I can talk here.
Your Bing glasses.
Yeah, your Microsoft Bing glasses?
Yes. Okay. But that's a lot of money for some glasses. I mean, almost $100,000.
Bet you the lenses still scratch.
Well, they're.
But these are very special glasses.
They are. And
Google is using them, because they want to limit it to the people that they allow to use the glass, to allow to buy the glasses.
Now, is that just going to be like the beginning?
That's just at the beginning, sure. Yeah. Once they figure this out, then they're just going to allow anybody that wants to pay $1,500 to use this.
Or I don't know if they're going to, after the beginning, if the initial
release.
It
goes
release,
up or down,
yeah,
right?
I mean,
we don't know.
Go up.
Yeah, and we don't know what form it's going to take in the future. This is beyond the proof of concept, but it's more, what can I do with this? Once we throw it out there, the creative juices are going to start flying with people.
Yeah.
And sort of like the scenario I described about the car accident or, the dog that actually just did a backflip in front of you, and you'll probably never see that again.
Hey, social media played a big role this last week in the Boston Marathon suspect. Captures, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was funny because over the weekend I'm on Facebook, and I'm looking at the suspects hours before they even announced it.
Yes,
there's people on Facebook posting
and Reddit. I was amazed.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then when they captured the second suspect, the actual police department, the chief of police, tweeted that, in fact, he was captured, which is unusual. I don't know if that's been done before, certainly not in something this high profile. So that's pretty amazing that the police are starting to use the social media as well.
And I was surprised at the lockdown. And, Shane, you told me something that I didn't realize is that it was tied into the
emergency broadcast, the new, the sirens for tornado and emergencies. They've tied it into cell phones now.
Yep.
So they were getting these alerts to stay in their homes, right there on their cell phones.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Smartphones.
Hey, we're going to take a short break, and then we are going to come back, and we're going to talk about iPads in the classroom. Well, this is Gary Baker with Ed Riddell and Shane Hamlin, and we have some special guests today in the studio with us. On this eve, just before the Michigan Governor's Education Summit on Monday, we're going to be talking about textbooks, or I should say maybe the lack of textbooks in the classroom, and being replaced by an iPad for each student. With me here in studio is Father John Huber from the Detroit Catholic Central High School and Sean Jorgensen from St. Mary's Catholic Central in Monroe. Welcome, guys, to the Internet Advisor Show.
Thanks for having us, Gary.
So, hey, we're talking about iPads replacing textbooks. And I've told people this week, I said, we're going to talk about banning textbooks in the classroom, right? And people went, what? And I said, yeah, and using iPads. But this was not an easy decision for Catholic Central, right, Father Huber?
No, there's all kinds of things that we have to take into consideration.
Tell us a couple things that led to even considering this, first of all.
Well, on a personal level, when I stand in the hallway and I see freshmen who weigh 80 pounds walking down the hallway with book bags that weigh more than they do,
my son.
And if they're involved in sports, they've got yet another bag. I've seen kids with a bag on the front and a bag in the back. That's just one consideration, of course. But another being that just taking a look at the textbooks that are now available and what they can do compared to the classic textbook. When we buy a textbook, sometimes they're up to $200 a piece.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And so we have to keep them for 4 or 5 years, and we rent them to the students. Whereas you take a look at some of the electronic textbooks that are available, and some of them are downloadable e-books, and others are something that is in the Internet. You take a look at what they can do as far as videos, as far as demonstrations. You can click on the images in the book and then see them larger. You can see demonstrations and explanations, and they're updated on a yearly basis. That makes a big difference compared to that $200 classic textbook that we have to keep for 4 or 5 years.
And it's probably 2 years out of date by the time you actually get it, if you got it right away, because of the length of time it takes to publish it and get it out to you and whatnot.
True enough. So, absolutely.
So I know this has been like a year-long process. We're not quite done, but this is an initiative that's going to be put into all of Catholic Central High School. So every student is going to be required to have an iPad. But they're not going to be required to buy or rent textbooks starting with the next school year, right?
That's right. We'll make an exception for our senior class because there were some parents concerned about buying an apparatus that they would only use for 1 year. And Sean will tell you about St. Mary's Catholic Central started just with their freshman and sophomore classes. We did a lot of visiting of other schools. We went St. Mary's Catholic Central in Monroe has been great, and they had us, and we actually walked through classes. We watched the teachers use them. We saw the students interacting with their teachers. We also visited Mercy in Farmington Hills that traditionally had laptops, but they started their freshman this year with iPads. Ladywood in Livonia is going to iPads next year. And the school that I used to be principal at in Houston, Texas, St. Thomas High School, started with tablets this year as well. So we took baby steps, and we were observing it first before we started to go in that direction.
Sean, Sean Jorgensen from St. Mary's Catholic Central in Monroe, you've been kind of on this path for now a year or two, right?
Similar experience to Father Huber in Catholic Central. We spent about 2 years prior to rolling out iPads to our freshmen and sophomores this year, visiting schools, speaking with a lot of places that were using the devices in different ways, looking at a lot of different models from Windows-based laptops to tablets to MacBook schools, and settled on the iPad really because of some specific things that we looked at that we felt were an advantage for us.
Like, give me an example of maybe something why you would pick an iPad instead of maybe a Galaxy Tab or an Android tablet.
Sure. One of the big things that affected our decision early on was battery life. The iPad devices, right. The Mac devices in general have great battery life, and we're in a very old building with very poor electrical equipment, so if we had to have everybody plugging in all the time, it would make it very difficult for us to do it in an efficient way. The iPad's battery life really helped us to make the jump in that direction for one reason. Another was Apple's App Store and the universe of apps created a controlled environment where we knew that every app that they're downloading on the device was Apple approved and part of has been through a vetting process. It didn't open up their devices to the sort of the array of viruses and everything else they might encounter if they're just downloading things off the internet.
Let's talk technology for a minute now. You said you have a very old building that your school is located in. That must have presented some challenges, right?
It certainly did. Yeah.
I mean, wireless in an old building sometimes doesn't work as well as in a newer building like Catholic Central. It's brand new. It's a wonderful campus, right? So you maybe had an advantage there. But Sean, what were some of the problems there?
So one of the things we began with really was a survey. We brought a company in called Virtual Technology Group from Toledo, Ohio, who has been a fabulous partner for us from the beginning. And they really helped us to map out our building and identify the challenges. We always joke in Monroe that if there's ever a disaster at Fermi or a tornado in the town, that you should come to our building and stand in our center hallway because our two main hallways are 3-foot poured concrete walls.
Oh, my gosh.
So VTG was instrumental in helping us to identify where we needed routers, what kinds of devices we needed in what places. And we spent a significant amount of money, between $200,000 and $300,000, in upgrading just the infrastructure itself before we were in a position to even consider any kind of one-to-one program, let alone an iPad program.
You know, that's pretty amazing. And Father Huber at Catholic Central, while you have a new building, you still have those technical challenges.
Sure.
But there were some other challenges that you had to overcome, right? There were people that weren't quite sure this was the right way to go. I know that you spent a great deal of time talking not only to students but to parents.
Absolutely. We surveyed the parents just to see exactly what kind of apparatuses that the students already owned. one of the points I wanted to make earlier, too, is when choosing Apple and it's an iPad, and it's very interesting, there are people that it's almost cultish as far as their dedication and their fidelity to one device or another.
Right.
And there are some very pro-Apple people, as if there were some kind of Apple church one could go to. And there are some vehemently against Apple. And I was never an Apple person myself, but one of the considerations that really pushed us in that direction was the price of the textbooks.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the parents said, well, my son has this Android device. Couldn't he just use that? But we looked, and for certain textbooks, we would be paying $16 for the iPad version, but $90 for the digital version for the Android. That makes a huge difference,
sure,
of course, in the budget. Another thing that we had to do, even though we're a newer building, our IT director just did a survey. We have some pretty good help from some of our parents, including one at Cisco Systems, and then one of your friends, I think, the CEO of CompuWare,
yes,
who's
uh-huh.
told me that you're good friends,
yep.
We did a similar survey as well, and even though our building is barely 9 years old, we had to add 50 access points all around. The wireless was stronger in some areas than others, so there were those challenges as well. But, you know, part of it is we need to communicate with parents from the very beginning, be very transparent from the very beginning, so that it's not a surprise, but also listen to their input and listen to their concerns. And some of their concerns are also based on, I'm not sure I want my son to have a device connected to the wireless 24 hours a day in our house. And we have to talk about those things as well.
Right. That's a very good point. I know that my son, who's a freshman there at Catholic Central, initially, the first part of the year was saying, well, I was dropping connection here and I was dropping connection there. Now he has no excuse not to get his homework done and to get his schoolwork done, because it does. He has connection all over the school now, and that's a very good side product of what you're doing, leading up to this whole idea of using these iPads. You know, now what I've noticed is that, you know, there's a lot of the kids that already have iPads.
That's right.
You know, Justin doesn't have his own yet, so he's really excited about the fact that, gee, Dad, I'm just going to be required to get one. But there's, beyond the textbooks, there's quite a bit of other resources there. I know we have to take a break now, but when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about some of the other things you can do, because it's not just trading one for one, a textbook for an iPad. There's lots of other things that you can do with the iPad in the classroom. We're talking with Father John Huber from Detroit Catholic Central High School and Sean Jorgensen from St. Mary's Catholic Central in Monroe, and we're going to come back and talk to them some more. Well, we have just been having a fascinating conversation with Father John Huber from Detroit Catholic Central High School and Sean Jorgensen from St. Mary's Catholic Central in Monroe. You guys have collaborated and helped each other figuring out how to bring iPads into the classroom for every student to use. We've talked to a number of different school systems where they might have an iPad here or there, and kids are able to go to a station if they get all their homework done to use the iPad or something. But we're talking about really replacing the typical textbook with iPads. But iPads can be so much more and so much richer, and you don't have to assign a chapter out of a textbook, but you can assign people, the students, to go to, you know, a website or some other facility. Are we thinking beyond just a textbook to use these iPads, Father Huber?
Absolutely. Several of our courses now are under a totally digital curriculum, which means they don't have textbooks at all.
And we, currently.
That's correct.
This is even waiting for next
honors
year.
Honors biology, chemistry. Next year will be world history and physics. Where we do pay a service through Cengage Learning, and they create, in collaboration with the actual teachers in the department and the school, they create a website with all of the resources, and the curriculum is very clear there, and the students just use that rather than a textbook. And, of course, what's really important is that the teacher can follow along and know. One of the challenges is that the students are the natives in this digital world, and we adults are the immigrants.
Boy, that's the truth.
But it's really fascinating watching what can actually happen. And the digital curriculum has been happening without iPads in front of every single student. It'll be interesting next year to see once they have the devices in front of them how it will even further the education. All kinds of links to all kinds of sites. And these are updated on a weekly basis, these digital curricula. It's really great.
You know, it was almost, as a matter of full disclosure, it would almost be like full circle. You mentioned that you pay Cengage Learning for some of these digital programs that you're using. I used to work as a CIO for Gale, part of Cengage Learning. So it would be, you know, only appropriate that, you know, you pay them, they pay me, I pay you in tuition. You know, it seems I don't work for them any longer. Sean, with, you know, what you're doing down there at St. Mary's Catholic Central in Monroe, you know, are you really starting to generate a lot of excitement within the student population? I mean, they got to be excited that they all get iPads.
Yeah, absolutely. The students were very excited about the opportunity to have an iPad. There is sort of that initial burst where they you know, it's all about gaming and it's all about the fun things they can do with their iPad. In our case, the students actually own the device. It is their device. They have the ability to put whatever content they and their parents agree they can have on their device. Mm-hmm. But then when they come into our building, we have a device management software system that allows us to block access to certain apps. Right. There's a student acceptable use policy that limits what they can and can't use the device for. But when they leave, they can have, you know, their content on their device and be able to use it in a way they want to. And the apps have really opened that up for them in the classroom for us. You know, our teachers and students have worked together to decide, you know, which of several apps they enjoy the most, which help them the best. And they actually are the ones making the decisions then about, well, we're going to use this app in this class for this purpose. And the students and teachers are kind of collaborating together. So that's been real positive, a real positive experience. In a lot of cases, obviously, the students are teaching the teachers how to use the device.
I noticed that when we were there, yes. One of the things that impressed me, too, that we're going to copy from you, Sean, is you have your version of a Geek Squad.
We do.
And they even have their own shirts, I noticed, that they were wearing.
Yeah,
they were the ones that guided us around when we visited St. Mary's Catholic Central. And I thought, what a great idea, because you've got a whole, I'm sure there's many qualified kids within any school population that know all kinds of things and would really like to give help out and be part of the team. And perhaps they're not on any other team within the school. And I was even noticing when teachers were in the front of the room doing something, a student, one of these team members would step up and say, Mrs. So-and-so, here, let me show you right here or there. And they really were, everything was very positive. I was impressed.
Thank you.
You know, what I've, you know, you talked about engagement. And I got to believe that kids would be excited to, you know, yeah, textbook, okay, yeah, I got to read this. But to read online, to interact with their iPad, with the technology, it's got to be engaging for them just something new. But beyond that, it seems to me that this is a way to keep students engaged, because you can ask questions and you can, like with Poll Everywhere, which is a free service, you can ask the class and every single person has to respond. And if they don't, you know who isn't answering the question or
absolutely
who answered it wrong, right?
Absolutely.
This is
absolutely
a way now that you couldn't teach like this before. This opens up a whole brand new way of teaching.
It really does engage every learner in the classroom. You have that ability to do engagement on a one-on-one level and even differentiated learning in a much different way than you were able to do before with the iPad. We've been able to use it to help flip classrooms with our teachers. They're able to record lessons very easily, and when they're going to be absent from the classroom, then have the students view those lessons. It's also helped us with some of our accommodations for students, where we have a few students who are auditory learners, mm-hmm, so they might need an auditory cue to remember something when they're taking a test. And some of our teachers have actually recorded those auditory cues for them that they can play during a test that helps them to remember that math formula they might not be able to pick up on. So it's been very helpful in that regard.
And the flipped classroom is now really becoming very popular,
right,
as well. And
that's
I was at the NCEA convention in Houston a couple of weeks ago and went to a couple conferences on it. And it's very interesting. The teachers make videos teaching the specific lesson, but the kid watches that lesson on his own time at home. And then basically more time in the classroom is spent doing the homework and getting guidance doing the homework, because he's watched the lesson, and he can watch it as many times as he wants, he or she, for co-ed schools, of course, at home, and has access to all kinds of other links and whatnot if he doesn't quite get it to begin with. And then in the classroom, it's actually flipped in the sense that the lesson is going on outside the classroom, and then the work is going inside the classroom, which is the opposite of what they're used to.
And, you know, as a parent who, you know, have my one of my kids say, "Dad, can you help me with this?" And if I can't, "Didn't you take this in high school?" You know, and I'm going, "That was a long time ago." So it just makes total sense to have them watch the lecture when they're at home and then go to school where somebody really does know how to help them, that's there, can help them work through some of the exercises and some of the homework. Let's take the last few minutes and talk about if somebody is out there, teacher, principal, parent on a PTO somewhere, and they want to start to move in this same direction, what are some of the things that they should be thinking about? What are some of the things that you had to consider, and what advice would you have for, like, the next school that wants to do what you're doing?
Sure.
Sean?
Well, I think to begin with, we went through the same process that Father Huber described in the beginning, surveying our students and our parents, asking them questions about the technology. That's the place to start to get a handle on where your community is in its access and use of technology. Next, the biggest part of this for us, and it'll be an ongoing issue as we move forward, is training our staff. And continually training our staff. We did some very intense training before the launch of the program. We continue to do what we call Tech Tuesdays, which is they get to come in and ask any questions they want of our educational technologist, Laura Struby, who's phenomenal in working with our faculty and helping them. She goes right into their classrooms and shows them how to integrate the iPad into their lessons. The iPad doesn't change the curriculum content. It enriches it, and it creates that engagement that you talked about before, Gary. So that's critical, the teacher training.
Sure. Father Huber, any words of advice for the next class, or next high school that wants to do this?
Well, they also have to take an inventory of what their infrastructure is in their building or buildings to make sure that all of these things are possible. And also, it's very critical that the teachers get the professional development that they need. And some, especially some of the veteran teachers who are closer to retirement, are a little nervous about all of this. But I think every single school, including our two schools, have a number of teachers that have been very creative for many years now using technology in the classroom and are more than willing to help out their colleagues.
Sure. And, you know, you mentioned it earlier, and we've mentioned it many, many times on the show here, that older, you know, us adults, sometimes we need help with the technology. But the students, they need help understanding what's actually true online. Just because it's written doesn't mean it's true. And so, you know, we can help them with the content, and they can help us with the context. And I think that's a great way to go. And it really does help the student really feel like a part of their learning experience, I think.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Thank you guys for coming in. We've been talking for the last couple segments with Father John Huber from Detroit Catholic Central High School and Sean Jorgensen from St. Mary's Catholic Central in Monroe. You guys are on the leading edge here, certainly in our part of the state and our part of the country, putting iPads into the classroom. We thank you for coming in to the Internet Advisor. Thank you. Well, this is the Internet Advisor Show. This is Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Shane Hamlin. And this time every week, we talk to our special partner, Mike Brennan from MyTechNews.com. Mike, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Thanks, Gary. How are you doing today?
We're doing great. Foster's traveling, but you're here, and you've got a lot of tech news to talk about.
Well, actually, let's start with a little entrepreneurial news. That's all near and dear to our hearts. The Small Business Association of Michigan just came out with their 9th annual Michigan Entrepreneur Scorecard. And while, you know, we aren't, you know, in the top 10 in any category, we've made some pretty significant improvement since 2009 as a state that, you know, fosters an environment for entrepreneurs and kind of mirroring what's going on right now in the economy. So it's getting better. Not where we want it to be, but, hey, I'll take better, right?
I'll always take better.
Okay. Well, also, Symantec every year does a report on what goes on with spam and cyber attacks and whatnot. And the latest one just came out last week, and it turns out that we've got less spam hitting us in our inboxes in various places, but we have more targeted attacks. So what that means is the bad guys, instead of using a shotgun approach, are using more of a rifle approach, and they're getting very good at it. So one more reason to make sure you do all your patches, to make sure that you have firewalls, that you have antivirus software and all that stuff.
Well, that's
also actually involving one of our local folks. The U.S. House of Representatives on Thursday passed the controversial Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protect Act, and Congressman Mike Rogers, that's one of his big things. He's a former FBI agent from Chicago, and so there's some issues about that on privacy. Just like everything else seems to be going on since 9/11. The government wants to know more about what we're doing as private citizens, and that's why this may or may not be vetoed by President Obama, because they would dig more into our Internet secrecy or our Internet privacy, as it were, and they would know more about us, and do we want that? That's the question that has to be asked.
So. Well, and that's part of it, but I think some of the other part is about how they can share information with private companies like they do with defense contractors today. So.
Yeah,
hopefully that part at least will survive.
You think you're getting targeted ads now?
Yeah.
Boy, wait till this goes through. If it goes through, you know. So.
So
this is just, I don't know how to describe this without being unkind, but Macomb County doesn't have a backup plan for its data, and they had a big fire in their old county building on Wednesday, wiped out all the servers and phone systems. And, they don't know where the data is, and they know how to get it back. So I'm sure it's stored somewhere, but right now they're back to pen and paper. That's just amazing that anybody in this day and age, particularly a government entity, would do that. So,
let's hope
I wanted to mention that a little public service announcement on my part, if I may. This is a very good thing. My designer, David Strange Jr., does my website, all my ads and whatnot. He has a daughter with a neurological disease called dystonia. And right now there's a competition going on online where several of the big vehicle makers, Honda and GM and a few others that make wheelchair accessible vans, if you vote for a worthy candidate to get one of these vans and it's in large enough numbers, then a $60,000 van then goes to the winner. And so I have MI Tech News has personally stepped up here, and I'm contacting my readers, and I'm hoping that some of the Internet Advisor audience would be interested in checking it out. She's really worthy. She's only 11 years old, and she's got some real serious ailments. And she does more than 1,000 routine physical therapies since she's been born, and surgeries, and she's gotten bigger, and they can't get her in and out of their vehicle. So this is something that it's a really worthy cause, one of those pay-it-forward sort of things.
So, and people that want to know more can go to our site, internetadvisor.net, and then link off to your site, which is mitechnews.com, and they'll get information there?
They can do that. And it's simple. You can vote every day. The competition goes through May 10th, and then the top five vote-getters are vetted. And trust me when I say this, I don't usually do this sort of endorsement. But in Brianna Rose's case, she needs it bad. This is a really good thing for people to do if they can do it. So
hopefully people will help out there. What else?
Well, there's always the usual government news going on. Michigan State University just came out with a study that finds that Michigan is growing into a very big tourism hotspot. That tourist spending
surprising.
In Michigan increased by 6% in 2012, and they're predicting a 5.5% increase in 2013. And the Pure Michigan campaign, sort of coincidentally this week, came out with some studies that showed that, they're getting a 5-to-1 return on investment for the legislature, all the money that the legislature authorizes to be invested in these ad campaigns is returned in tax dollars at the ratio of about 5-to-1. So I suppose you can correlate the two together and say, we're bringing a lot of other people into the state who are spending a lot of money here that they're paying taxes and they're helping our economy.
So, you know, so I think you're right there. Hey, I know that you are, you know, just a connoisseur of the news and all things about news and reporting the news. What did you think about some of the use of social media in the Boston marathon bombing suspects capture? And it seemed amazing to me that, you know, here we have the law enforcement agency starting to use social media. What was your thoughts on some of that?
Well, that's kind of an extraordinary situation. You know, I'm always edgy when, as one who's been covering or protecting the First Amendment now for about 34 years, to have any, you know, uses of it. But this is not, but social media, I don't know, I suppose it's First Amendment stuff. But, I mean, in this case, I know they had that internal debate, too. They weren't sure whether they wanted to share those photographs of the alleged bombers because they weren't sure whether that was a good, because they were afraid they would scare them off. But instead, it really helped out because a lot of people came forward that knew these people because they weren't able to identify who they were because they weren't apparently on any Homeland Security databases or any kind of police databases. So, and this is kind of an extraordinary case where I thought it was a pretty good idea, but in general, I like to keep that separation. So,
yeah, you know, you have all sorts of people being amateur news reporters taking over your job as a professional.
Yeah, that's another irritant for me is I've been doing this all my adult life. I have training in it. You know, I've written 20,000 stories. And I don't think anybody can ever tell from reading one of my stories what my opinion is. Well, that's the problem that I have with bloggers, is it's a soapbox for many of them. And you know, it's their opinion is all over the copy, and that's just something we're taught not to do.
So. Yeah. Yeah, and like you said, you've had training not only here in Michigan. When I first met you, you were working for one of the major news outlets.
Yes, I was. But, and I worked in five other states and worked for major metropolitan dailies. I was in the newspaper business for 22 years and worked my way up just like, well, what was left of that business. Now my business, I advise my children not to go into my business because it was, you know.
It so, is changing. Mike Brennan from MyTechNews.com, thank you again for being our partner, and we'll talk to you again next week, same time. Thanks, Mike. We're going to take a short break here at the top of the hour, listening to Gene Fogel with the news, and then we're going to come back and talk to you about the things that you're having trouble with the internet. So get ready to call us. Our telephone numbers are 800-859-0957. We'll be back after this to answer your questions. And again, if you want to start off with an easy one, we love easy questions.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. If you want to see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage or enter our forums and place your question there. You can also friend us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor Show podcast.
Well, this is Gary Baker, and you're listening to this second hour of the Internet Advisor Show. And our team of tech experts, Ed Riddell and Shane Hamlin, are here to answer your questions. So get on the phone. Call us at 800-859-0957, and we would love to answer your questions, especially if they're easy ones first. We'll be back right after this. Well, thank you, and this is the Internet Advisor Show. We have a whole hour now to talk about all things internet, people that want to call us.
Right.
They can ask us any question around their mobile technology, their computers. We've answered things like Apple TV.
Yep.
Right? We don't have Cal with us this week,
I think he's doing Craigslist today. He is scouring Craigslist for that. You know, something good and free.
You're right. That's Cal. Okay, let's go right out to the phones and talk to Jim from Westland. Jim, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show.
Well, thank you very much. I've got a couple of questions. First of all, I'll make a quick comment about my iPad. When I wanted to look up my son's new dog, it's Prince Charles Cavalier. Uh-huh. All I had to do was say it real quickly, and it goes to the site. I'm wondering if that same app is available for my iMac that I can use on my iPad.
I know it is for the iPhone because I use it there. What about the I don't think Siri's available as an app anyway. I wonder if they have voice recognition for Apple. I know that the voice...
They do because you can use a free version of Dragon.
Yes, and I was just going to say, I know that Dragon and it's probably actually Dragon Speak is probably the best on the PC. Do they have a version for Mac?
Yes, they do.
Okay.
However, the free version for the iPad is, to me, leaving much to be desired. I can type 100 words a minute, and rather than re-edit my script, I'd rather just type it out.
Just, Okay, so I can't talk that fast. So.
Right. and Siri is just so tightly integrated within the iPhone.
Right.
I do not believe it's available for the Mac, but that would be a nice enhancement.
Yeah, it sure would be. Now, you know, the Google Voice is being used on the Android phones and the Android tablets, and that works out even better than Siri. So,
well, the Google Voice also works good to ring all your phones, even when you set it up on the iPad. So,
so
I like Google
that.
Voice. I really do.
So you use you would suggest Google Voice then from everything that you've been trying? Okay. I like Google Voice as well. I've been using it quite a bit now on my iPhone. In fact, I use it before I use Siri for most things, and it works out really well.
My other big question that I called about is, if my friend and I want to record, since we've been friends for years, a conversation between us. Myself, I lean on Audacity to get both sides when using my Mac. Do you have any other software that you recommend? And if we're doing video-to-video, like on Uvu, you can record both sides of the conversation in video, where I'm not aware that you can do that on Skype.
I was going to ask one of these guys if they knew if they could do that on Skype, because that would be my default. I would go to Skype to see if you could do it, but I don't know that.
Well, I was going to ask about FaceTime with...
Oh, FaceTime you could.
Yeah, with FaceTime, I that may have a recording capability.
I thought Skype with the full the pro version, you were able...
Microsoft.
You were able to record the video and conversation.
So you think with the pro version... Have you tried that, Jim, the pro version of Skype?
No, I haven't. Right now I've been running the free version. In fact, for about the first 3 years they offered phone service, you could get it for free, but not the case anymore.
Yeah.
It looks...
You know, the free version has been so good for me to use, I'd never even thought about using the pro version.
It looks...
You and I are on the same boat on that one, but again, Uvu makes it real easy to do video on both sides and save it and then burn a DVD of it and you've got a conversation. And I don't think that's illegal if both parties are agreeing and you're not using a phone line to do it.
Yeah, I'm not actually sure that it's illegal even if both parties don't agree. I think you're able to do that as long as you don't even have to tell them that you're recording it.
Hey, Jim.
Yes.
It looks like Skype has several different apps that you can download that will allow you to record the call, which would be the audio and video.
Now, would that be on the free version, or I'd have to get the pro version?
It looks like it would work. The apps will work with any of the versions. It's just some of the apps are free and some of them are paid, just like...
Now, what term would I use to search the apps out at the App Store?
You know, why don't you... Actually, if you go to Google or Bing and just search Skype, you know, record Skype calls...
That's what you're going
to. It'll take you right to the Skype shop. Skype has its own app shop, right at their website.
Okay.
Okay, I'll give that a look, and thank you very much for all your help.
You're most welcome, Jim.
Yep.
Jim, thank you for calling.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
We appreciate it.
You know, and that's an application I've used for years is Audacity. It's a free SoundForge. It's great. And you and I were talking, if you want something really good, use the
top of the line. I mean, what the industry like radio and all these professionals use is Audition. You know, that's Adobe Audition is. It can get a little expensive on some of the higher end packages, but they have a free version you can try out. They have a smaller, you know, standard version that isn't quite as expensive, but it works really well. And if you're thinking about getting into recording, whether it be voiceover work or any of that stuff, you better learn Audition.
Right. I know that if you have a subscription to Link, and a lot of people that are using Office 365 do have that capability, you can also record both sides using Link. But you have, but that is paid. I don't think you can do that with the free side of Link. I think
it's a fee.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. Jesus from Detroit. We have you teed up next as soon as we come back, so hang in there. And there are open lines for you. So give us a call, 800-859-0957. We'd be happy to answer your call, or at least try. Well, this is Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Shane Hamlin here in studio. And we are going to answer your questions, or at least we're going to try. And we're going to try with Jesus from Detroit. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. What can we do for you? Hi,
thank you for taking my call.
I'm glad you could call in, and hopefully you have an easy question that we can answer.
Okay.
You can try it.
That didn't sound good.
Yeah. What can we do for you?
I've seen advertised in these catalogs,
okay,
this gadget. It costs between $19.95 and $29.95. And you plug it into your computer, and you can reach 5,000 different radio and TV stations around the world.
Now, that's so funny you mentioned that. My wife comes to me Friday when I get home from work. She goes, "Have you heard of rabbit ears?" And I'm like, "Well, yeah, I mean, that's something you put on top of your TV." She goes, no, it's a product called rabbit ears.
Oh, it's
and
yes.
You can get thousands of radio and television on your for $19, and I didn't look into it, Jesus, but I said if it's too good to be true, it's not true. I don't know how
that's what I was wondering. That's what I was thinking about. It might be some kind of a, you know, gimmick, or just something, you know, just to beat you out of your money.
Oh yeah, it's called Rabbit TV.
You buy it and it won't have work or something like that.
Right.
Well, I will tell you that there are a couple other free movie sites out there. Popcorn Flix, Popcorn F-L-I-X, Flix.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're not first-run movies, but there's a ton of movies that you can get free. You do have to listen to advertisement, which is how they pay for it. But if you go to popcornflix.com, you can search through your drama, all the different categories, drama or comedy or whatever,
right.
And those are free movies.
And there's a number of European and BBC stations where you can watch, my kids are really into Doctor Who and
right.
Downton Abbey, and they'll watch them by going over there, months before they're released over here.
Yep. And, a Roku box.
Yep.
Plugging that into your TV or Apple TV is another way to get basically free services, television series online, movies online. For a small amount, you can go to Hulu Plus, and that's a small amount per month, and you can watch that, some first-rate television series using Hulu Plus.
It's so hard, though, nowadays.
Hulu Plus.
Yeah, it's H-U-L-U Plus, Hulu Plus.
And that was purchased by NBC, I believe, like a year ago.
Universal.
Right. Used to be completely free, but now, of course,
you got to pay a little bit.
Well, they still have the basic Hulu.
Yes.
Right. You still can get Hulu.
Yeah.
Good product.
You can get some decent stuff there, but if you want the upgraded version, you got to pay a little bit.
And the thing is right now with internet TV, we've talked about this before, is everybody's got their exclusive rights here, their exclusive deals here. So you've got to have 6-7, contracts going or memberships going to get everything that you need.
Right.
Right.
That you can get with just
correct.
Cable subscription.
Yeah. And the first
or
time
satellite TV.
The difference is that, cable subscription, it's costing you, $50, $60, $70 sometimes to get everything that you want. Now, you can't get everything without cable. There's certain things you have to get through cable. But there's an awful lot available for you know, $4.95 worth of Hulu Plus and all the free stuff out there, and you can get an awful lot.
You say Hulu Plus, and the other one was Popcorn Flip?
Flix, F-L-I-X, like Netflix.
Popcorn, yeah, it's very similar.
Yeah, just like Netflix, only it's Popcorn Flix.
But you know, Jesus, if you forget all this stuff, you can catch the rebroad, you know, the podcast.
That's right. So if you go to our site, starting tomorrow night, we'll have the podcast up. You can listen to this whole show again and slow it down and make sure that you get this. So if anybody's out there that's driving in the car or something, you don't have, you know, we don't want you to have to pull over to write some of this down. Just go to internetadvisor.net. When you get home tonight or tomorrow and you'll be able to listen to the podcast.
You know, I'm not even sure how that Rabbit TV works. It looks like it's just a special device that attaches to your wireless network that goes to a subscribed website, and they gather all the content for you. You're still paying a monthly subscription fee to them for $10 a month.
But it's still a little cheaper than doing cable, right? But
you still have to get high-speed internet from them. From someone, yeah, usually your cable company.
Yep.
It looks extremely. You know what I think they're doing is they have a stream. They have either their satellite or their cable in this server, and they're just streaming it live. And you're picking up the online stream through them. But right. I can't imagine these companies allowing this to go on very much longer.
So if anybody's out there that has some experience that you'd like to share with us, please give us a call. 800-859-0957. We'll put you on the air, and you can give us your opinion of what some of these services and good or bad, right? We're looking for some feedback. So if you are listening and you've used some of these services, we'd love to hear from you and broadcast that out to the listening audience. So give us a call. Jesus, does that help you now?
Much.
Okay. Hey, we appreciate your phone call. It allows us to help you and help some other people, so thank you. Let's go to Shirley in Westland. Shirley, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show.
Yes, I just got you guys on by mistake, just turning on the radio. I wasn't planning on listening to this. But
that's what my wife said to me. I was a mistake.
Well, it's not a mistake. It's a blessing. Because okay. I never put a Google Voice, and they compared it with Siri when I came out of church. I was just wondering, what is Google Voice?
So if you were to go to Google and on your iPad or your iPhone, and I think you can use that now on any device that you can get to Google search, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
And you just hit, there's a little microphone, you hit that, and then you just speak into the microphone on your computer or
on your laptop, on your Android phone device or smartphone device.
And it's wonderful. I don't know the last...
Is it a free service?
Yes, it comes right with Google. Google
you
search.
You have to be registered, though.
You have to have a registered Gmail.
You have to sign in to Google to get that to work.
But it's free.
Yeah correct. Right? Yes.
So if you have a Google account, you just set up and... use the Google account that you use for everything else.
It's a form of hands-free. So, like, when you're driving, you just say, call home and, you know, stuff like that. Or if you want to do search for something.
I can't tell you the last time it's made a mistake. Now, I only give it a few, you know, because I'm looking for search terms. So I say, please, you know, what was the score of XYZ game? And it'll come back and tell me.
Wow. So, in other words, as long as you have an internet... access and you just punch in google.com and then you look for the hit voice.
That's right. So if you were to go to Google, you know, Google search, you can just go up to Google. I'm looking for it on my Google right now.
Yeah, if you go to Google and then you put a google.com/voice.
Voice. That's it.
Right.
Yep.
And
okay.
It says, teach your phone new tricks. Google Voice enhances the existing capabilities of your phone, regardless of which phone or carrier you have, for free. It also gives you one number, one voicemail, and cheap calls. So,
The neat thing about it is you can use that. You can use Translate, Google Translate. My son's been sending some email down to some Spanish-speaking countries, to Guatemala, and he just uses Google Translate. It's a wonderful service as well. So, you know, explore your Google you know, your Google search. It really is. It's amazing what they're able to do for you.
And I have one more question, if I can.
I'll tell you what. We're going to put you on hold, and we're going to take you right after this commercial break because the music's playing. That means we have to go pay some bills. But we'll come back to you right after this commercial break. Well, welcome back. We were just talking to Shirley from Westland, answering her questions about Google Voice. And Shirley, you have another question that you'd like to ask us.
Well, it was basically the one prior to the one that I heard on the radio. It was at freemovies.com that you can go online and get the free movies at Hulu Plus.
Hulu.
Or that popcorn, what was that?
Popcorn Flix, popcorn F-L-I-X, just like Netflix.
Right.
And Hulu.
And Hulu is H-U-L-U plus.
Right.
.com. Yeah, don't go to freemovies.com. Don't.
Oh, is that not
a... Oh, no, it's not a good site.
Oh, it's not? Okay.
No.
Those kind of movies? Okay, don't go
No.
Oh, okay.
Just bloatware and...
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh, okay.
Don't go there.
All right.
Yeah, lots of pop-ups.
Yeah,
so.
Don't go there.
So does that help you?
Okay, so in other words, there is no freemovies.com. It's go to the Hulu Plus or go to the Popcorn Flix.
Yeah, Popcorn Flix, there is... those are free movies.
Mm-hmm.
They are free.
Yes.
Yep. Wonderful. So you just have to download them?
No, just stream them. Just pop, you know, pick the one you want, and it'll start to play.
Okay, great.
Yep.
Now, what hours are you on the radio, and is it just Saturdays that you're on? Because I never heard of you guys.
Yep, Saturdays 4 to 6, and you could go to internetadvisor.net. We are syndicated not only here in Detroit on WJR, but then there's five other stations around the state that also pick us up. Different times of the calendar, different times of the week, and different times of the day. So you'll be able to see the whole list right there on internetadvisor.net. We are in our 16th year, so
okay.
We've been doing this for a while. So thank
Never
you.
Never heard of you guys. Thank
well,
you.
Well, we appreciate if you dial us in again. Thanks.
Okay.
Let's go to Rich from Westland. Rich, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show. Hi, what can we do for you?
I have a computer that when I go to turn it on, it won't turn on. The button below it, or the light below it, flashes on and off and clicks for about 10, 15 minutes. Then when it stops, then I know I can turn it on.
Interesting. And so you try to turn it on, and it just clicks until it stops clicking, and then you push the button again, and it turns on.
Right. Yeah, there's a light that flashes off and on. In fact, it just stopped. I had it on. I turned it on about 10 minutes ago. Now I can turn it on. I've been waiting about 10 minutes.
So now, do you turn it on and off every night?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. And is this a notebook, or is this a desktop?
Desktop.
Okay. So I can't tell you the last time I've turned my notebook off. It's probably been 2 months.
Did he say notebook or?
He's on a desktop.
A desktop, okay.
Yeah, you know, I just close my notebook.
It's you know, it's all about the
environment. You could put it to sleep and never turn it off.
Yeah, you
if
can
that's
leave,
a problem, right?
I mean, electronics are made to run if the environment's right, cool and clean. They'll run forever.
Right. I mean, look at a server room.
Yeah.
You never turn the servers off.
Satellites in space with some of those computers for 30, 40 years are running. You know, it's cool and clean. But
we cycle them every 90 days in our data center just because, you know, you probably should do it every 90 days or so. Otherwise, they stay on the rest of the time.
What about the electric bill? That's what I'm saying.
Turn the monitor off because that's your biggest draw for.
Oh, that's all?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, back
the
in
rest
the...
of the time, it goes into hibernation. It's just a bare trickle.
Okay.
It's just a bare trickle.
That's interesting.
Yeah. With my notebook, because it's unplugged, I just throw it in my bag, and it might stay in my bag for, you know, 14, 16 hours sometimes. I'll pull it out and just turn it on. Just open it up, and it turns back on.
Now, what would be wrong with this that it would perform that? A bad ground, bad power supply probably?
The clicking that kind of gives me something.
That's a power supply.
Something
right?
is switching. There's a switch. That clicking noise is a switch.
Switch, right.
Making that noise. So something is not right. It's flipping, triggering that switch.
Right.
You may want to pull your side cover off.
Unplug the computer.
Unplug the computer. pull your side cover off, look inside, and see if you can see any bad capacitors blown. Okay. And, you know, a capacitor normally will be flat on the top portion of it, the surface. It'll be, you'll see the little X or the cross. It'll be flat. A bad capacitor will be bulged or popped, and you'll see something leaking out of it.
Okay.
And that could be something that's causing some of the problems.
Right. Now, how old was this computer? I'm sorry.
I'm not sure. I bought it from a friend about 4 years ago.
And he probably had it for two or four years. So it may be at the end of its life. Yeah. So the other thing I would suggest is back up your data as soon as possible. Somehow you can go to a store and for $16 to $20, you can buy yourself a 16 or a 32 gigabyte, which is probably about the size of the hard drive that's in there, a USB flash drive. And you can plug it into your computer, and you can copy all your data off.
Right.
Because one day you're not going to be able to power that thing up, and you're going to go
one day soon.
Yeah, one day soon you're going to. That may happen.
I see.
Yeah, I mean, because you know you're saying the clicking, and that always. Whenever I hear clicking on a computer,
that's
it scares
good.
Me.
Yeah, that's not good.
Okay, the light flashes and it clicks.
the two worst things: flashing lights and clicking. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. It says a 40 gig hard drive.
Yeah, that's an old Euro. Yeah, that's probably nine-year-old computer.
Yeah,
wow, you're on borrowed time as it is.
Okay, good to know. Maybe I'll go to a laptop.
I think you'll like it because you'll be able to sit in any room of your house.
Yeah,
sit out on the deck.
Yeah, yeah. Don't sit by the pool with a laptop.
Okay.
Not unless it's a Panasonic. Tough book.
Rich, do we help you?
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Sure enough. Thanks for calling. Yeah. I think Rich has a tough one there.
Yeah, you mentioned that Panasonic Tough Book. Yes. I actually had to work on one of those this week.
Yeah, was it pretty tough?
Oh,
it's a tough. You know, taking it apart. I've never taken one apart.
I never knew it had the hard drive was within a Faraday cage.
What?
Yes.
No way.
Really?
Oh, I got to see it.
Yes.
Take some pictures. Do you still have it?
No.
Oh, man.
It's in its own Faraday cage.
Really?
It was wrapped up. I mean, it will survive a nuclear blast.
The early IBM ThinkPads from the late 90s were like that. They were wrapped in not tin foil, but, you know, very hardened foil, and then they had their own ground straps, and I used to hate changing the hard drives in those days.
Yeah,
but one of the ThinkPads were actually on the space shuttle up there?
Space station.
Space station, thank you. when one of their modules decompressed.
Yeah.
And it was in there for 3 months, decompressed, and the only thing they had to do was change out the light bulb.
Love it.
Everything, great products.
Yeah.
IBM, which is now Lenovo.
Lenovo, yep. Let's go out to Jerry from Hudson. Jerry, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Got
what can
a
we do
problem
for you?
With a Dell laptop.
Okay.
Need to replace the hard drive, and I'm determining whether it's worth it or not. It's about 5 years old.
So you're right on the borderline.
Yeah. So what's wrong with the hard drive?
It just completely shut down.
Okay.
Yeah, I was having all kinds of problems with it before, and I can mess around with it a little bit and read some old files. That's about all I could do.
Have you still got the original manufacturing restoration DVDs? Did you ever make those?
No, I don't. I got it secondhand.
Okay.
So what would he pay for a hard drive for a five-year-old Dell?
Well, I mean, you're not going to... It's probably an IDE hard drive.
Right, right.
No, five-year-old Dell. He's probably a SATA drive.
You think it's SATA?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, SATA drive. You're not going to get, you know, probably a SATA drive. You're not going to find... Now everything's 500 gigs or more for a hard drive.
Right.
Yeah, so he's probably going to pay 80, 90 bucks.
As opposed to 400, he could get a reasonable laptop?
Yeah, I mean,
replacement?
Well, the problem is when you figure I'm going to buy a hard drive, well, unless you're planning on loading that hard drive and loading all the drivers, you're going to have someone do that for you.
You may have to buy the operating system either yourself or call Dell and pay $20, and they'll ship you a restoration DVD.
Correct.
So now you're $20 or another $100 into it.
Mm-hmm.
And he has an old bus. He has an old 5-year-old Dell laptop, right?
Yeah. You're running what, Vista?
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So that's a good, and that's a good reason to get rid of that anyway.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you can nowadays you can replace that for you, like you said, you know, $400 and get a beauty between four and five hundred. Right now seems to be the sweet spot for new computers. Not too high, not too low, just right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you make a decision on whether you go to Windows 8 or if you go to a Windows 7 machine.
Yeah. Right. And that's a lot of. Up to yourself. I wouldn't go into Windows 8 unless I got a touchscreen.
Yep.
And which
my daughter's got Windows 8, and I wouldn't even use that for anything.
Then you can go with the Windows 7 version.
Yeah, and then you don't need the touchscreen.
I've been on computers for 50 years, and that's the biggest bunch of junk I've ever.
You know, my son loves it. It's just a matter of, I think you have to be under 20 to appreciate it. That's
all. You got to learn all over again when you use it.
Yeah, you do. Hey, Jerry, thank you very much for calling us. We got to take a break, but we're going to be back after this for one last segment. Well, guys, we've had a few callers today where their computers were just about ready to give up the ghost. And unfortunately, we weren't able to save it. But speaking of ghosts, Shane Hamlin,
yes.
you help out Fort Wayne, historic Fort Wayne.
Well, this is where, there's an event coming. I like ghost hunting. When I'm not doing computer stuff, I'm all into ghost hunting and paranormal and all that fun stuff. But there's a huge event coming next week at Fort Wayne, Detroit.
So May 4th?
May 4th. Yep. It is a long day. It's 2 p.m. until 2 a.m. Now, you don't have to stay that whole time, but it's $25.
And it's 2 a.m. because you're going ghost hunting.
We're
going
to do a little investigating at night. And I will say this. If you've never been to Fort Wayne, it's probably one of the hottest spots in Detroit.
Hottest or haunted? Most haunted.
Both. Yeah, hot haunted place. Yeah, I mean, you're guaranteed almost to have some kind of experience. I mean, it's just a great place. And people don't realize, it needs help. It's in the city of Detroit. For all the preservation and the restoration that's going on and the maintenance, this event does help that.
You know, we were on our way to the Outback Bowl and my son's lacrosse tournament this last winter, and we stopped in Savannah, and we took a ghost tour. And oh, what fun! I had three college-age girls with me, and we...
I would never do that.
They just had a great time.
You would hear Edward Dell screaming like a little girl. I just will not even consider
all
doing
four
that.
Of us were screaming. It was fun.
And it's such a, it's such a great place if you've never been there. They do reenactments. They do events all year.
I haven't
year.
Been there since Scouts. Yeah, since the
it's
early,
been a long time.
And late
it's,
70s.
It's $25 for the whole day. Mm-hmm. And, with all the stuff that's going on now with TV, with the paranormal's kind of hot right now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If you ever were curious about it and wanted to just kind of see how it works, you don't have to go in there with all this equipment. You can just come out there, hang out, listen to people, some lectures going on. There'll be some vendors there. And then at night we're going to do some investigating. And it's a big place.
And it's a way to support Fort Wayne, historic Fort Wayne.
Correct. And I think we're going to put something up on the site.
Yep, it's up there.
Yeah, so if you go to the site, there's a link there. It's $25. It's next week. Really great people that put this on.
A week from now.
A week from now, yes.
Right. Or 2 weeks from now.
Right. May 4th. Yeah, May 2 4th. Weeks from now. Yes, okay. Correct. And it really benefits a great facility. And it's a beautiful area, and it's just big and beautiful. It's great in the summer, too.
And if you're like me, who haven't, and Ed, who we've not been there since, we were kids, this is a great time to plug back into historic Fort Wayne right here in Detroit.
If you're into history, it's perfect. It's really cool.
Yep, and who knows?
You never know.
Yeah.
You may find you have a friend by the end of the evening.
That's right.
So, speaking of friends, Dick Hafner had a couple friends to help him out. Dick Hafner's our news director here at WJR.
Right.
And
gave me a call on the way home from
you.
Work.
Yeah, so what happened?
Tried to talk them through how to their computer was acting suspiciously. They couldn't go to websites, but by the time I spoke to them, they did not even have the ability to perform a system restore on their Windows 7 computer because every program, every icon they clicked on brought up a website. And I said, "Where do you live?" And I says, "I know someone, Shane, but I don't know his computer store. He's on the Internet Advisor with us quite frequently. He has his own business." And it's right down the street from you.
And so, it is.
It was, yeah, wasn't it? Was.
Yeah. So, and he, so
Shaner 19.
Comtech.
Okay.
Comtech Services. We're right at the corner, Shaner 19. You can get all my information at the Internet Advisors website up there.
So what did you do for Dick?
You know, he had a virus. You know, it was infected.
And we all do from time to time, right?
Everybody does. And there's nothing, you know, there's nothing out there. And he's like, well, I've got, you know, a Microsoft Security and Norton or, you know, Defender. And he's, I thought I was protected.
Yeah. And he is for the most part, right?
Correct.
And you, so he didn't get it as badly or as often as other people that aren't protected.
Correct.
But it still can happen.
And we were
zero-day viruses.
Yeah,
right?
We were talking, how do you stop these? And you really can't. And we may kind of talked about this analogy. It's kind of like getting a flu shot, right? If you get the flu shot, you may still get the flu, but just not as bad.
Right.
Because there's nothing out there that guarantees.
You're certainly reducing the likelihood.
Correct. And I can't prevent you from clicking a link or opening an email. I just can't do it.
And sometimes that's what it is, right? They trick us into infecting ourselves.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And there's nothing that you can do. There's nothing out there that will prevent us from just acting foolish sometimes. Right.
And there are websites that are compromised. Yeah. You know, for a short period of time, it could be 20 minutes before they notice it. And it could be a site that you frequent all the time. They're not going to publicize that happened. They're going to fix the problem and move on.
I mean, CNN. You can go to CNN.
And, know, yes.
And get infected.
Yes.
Auto Trader.
Yep.
And get infected.
Yep.
Yeah, you know? there's some obviously well-known sites like that we all know have from time to time, like you said, and they don't tell you, they fix it and move on. Yeah. Right?
And the thing about viruses now is they're so tricky. They're not going to pop up when you get infected.
No.
They're never going to show their head. Because they know, well, then we...
Because then you'd report it, and people would fix that site.
Correct.
And it would go away. Yeah.
So they'll have triggers. You know, the fifth time I restart my computer, the third time I open up internet browser.
Yeah, 4 days later. I mean, or what they do is what they do is they're, you know, they raise their hand and say, I am a bot. I am available for you to receive instructions. And they raise their hand, and then eventually they'll get their instructions from the mothership, from, you know, China or Russia or South Africa or, you know, South America. And then their machine then becomes infected or infects other computers, or they steal information off your computer. We don't know what the payload is. What benefit do they have? It could be monetary. It could be a denial of service where they're holding some corporation or some other website hostage and say, you pay us money, CNN or someone else, or we're going to send 20,000 computers and knock down your site so you don't get business.
And I don't want to scare everybody. We don't want to do that.
No.
But I mean, like in Walking Dead, they're all infected. I guarantee you, everybody's computer's got something on it that needs to be cleaned.
Yes.
There's something there. You know, whether it be some bloatware or minor malware.
Yeah, coupon questions.
For most of us, it's pretty minor.
Yes.
But
you would know.
Yeah. Right.
You know.
Right. Yeah. But you're right. It's there. And I will tell you from... You know, I go in and I use Malwarebytes, or I'll use a Combo Fix, and I'll just clean. Sometimes just CCleaner, right? And start cleaning things off, and I'm going, man, I wonder how long that's been there, right?
Yeah, when did that sneak in there?
Yeah,
exactly, Gary.
And people don't know, we're talking about programs that are available on our website.
That's right. And under Ed, you want to talk about the toolkit?
Yep, InternetAdvisor.net. You go to the Tools tab at the top, and we have free antivirus software on there, and then also Malwarebytes, our favorite scanner, and plus Combo Fix. And Malwarebytes now provides a rootkit scanner, which, by the way,
really
also scans for some malware, too. So my daughter called me last week and said, I just went out to dinner with my cousin Melissa, and her computer's infected, and what do I do? So I talked my daughter into performing a system restore 7 days. Wasn't far enough back, sort of like what Shane said.
Yeah.
This little puppy was on there for an extended period of time, and for some reason her computer had no more restore points. So what we did is we came up in safe mode with networking. We downloaded the Malwarebytes rootkit scanner, which not only removed the rootkit that was on there at this time, but then also removed a lot of malware, and then she also ran Malwarebytes. She installed Microsoft Security Essentials. She's happy. My daughter looks like a brain.
Boy, you know, it's in the blood, right? It's got to be. It's, right?
I was on the phone
all
with
the
her
family.
For hours.
Behind the scenes.
Yeah,
let sure. Dad
I wish my
help
kids
you.
Know how to do that.
Yeah, let Dad help you become
She'll
really
remember.
Smart.
She remembers everything.
Yeah, that's great. Hey, we're at the end of another show. Folks, thank you very much for listening in to us. For the people that have called, hopefully we've helped you and helped a lot of other people by answering your question. Behind the Glass, thank you, Annie Nichols, and we appreciate all the people here that help us make it possible for us to come into your house or your car each week. So thank you again. We'll be back on the air next week.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisors Show, the longest-running, locally-produced computer show in Detroit radio. If you'd like to find out more about our weekly show, ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit internetadvisor.net. And you'll also find us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.